Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:06 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 15th. I thought I would kick off today by looking at China because the market was down in a reasonably dynamic manner. Although when we look at the actual number of points that it moved off the close on Friday, then it doesn't look like very much, but it was well up on the day initially and then just reversed the entire advance. Part of the reason for that is because people are looking at the quantity of credit growth that has taken place in China in the first quarter, and it is record beating. We haven't seen this kind of credit growth in China in years, and that is raising the question of how sustainable is this, and how willing is the government going to be to continue on this credit support mechanism against a background where the stock market has responded very favorably and the economic figures are starting to improve as well. There is a perception that the Chinese administration does not want a bubble, and I think that is probably well founded. But there are additional considerations. This year has got three very important anniversaries. So you have the Tiananmen Square anniversary, you have the founding of the Communist Party, and then you have the founding of the People's Republic of China. And then you also have an important anniversary for the founding of the People's Liberation Army. So in fact, that's really four really quite important anniversaries. And the last thing that the administration wants would be an economic contraction or anything but a bull market against which to celebrate these very important anniversaries. Obviously, the Tiananmen Square one is going to be brushed under the carpet. And what that suggests to me, at least, is that we are due some consolidation on the Chinese market, but probably not a great deal more than that. Particularly if we look at the weekly chart, we can see clearly that there is a really quite a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and there is ample scope in which to consolidate and still remain above it. Then when we look at the banking sector, then it was also well off its highs in here today. So we're definitely getting a little bit of reticence to push on to new high ground and to sustain a move above the 16,000 level. And this continues to look like a process of consolidation. Then when we look at what's going on in Japan, well, the Nikkei was in positive territory today, and it held its initial pop above the 22,000 level. So this is the first time it's been back above this area since December, and I think perhaps more importantly than that is that it is now breaking away from the region of the trend mean. So that's really quite impressive. That's a quite impressive performance. Then when we look at the second section index, it is coming back towards this 7,000 level. And this is a really important technical barrier because it represented support all the way through 2018. We had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. The pace of the rebound has been slower than the pace of the decline. It's hard to argue that it could possibly have been faster, but now the question is whether it's going to be able to sustain a move back above 7,000. If it can push back above 7,000 and hold it, then that's going to be, I think, a very clear indication that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, which should be beneficial for just about all of Japan's assets. So that's, I think, we're at a rather important point right now, especially with the Nikkei starting to do better. Generally, the second section has been a lead indicator for that market. So the fact that it is not confirming on the upside yet, well, then that is a potentially a detracts somewhat from an outright bullish conclusion to this move on the Nikkei. It would certainly be comforting to see the traditional lead indicator starting to also perform here. Then we have the election underway in India, and the Nifty was in positive territory in here today. This has been a very mild consolidation in the region of the peaks from back in September. Then in Indonesia, the election starts on Wednesday, and that market has been largely range-bound all year. so far at least, and is at least steadying from the lower side of its range. What I also thought was interesting, I was looking at various funds, but the fact that the Thai market has bounced now from the 1600 level and it's back above the trend mean that it's confirmed support in the region of the upper side of that underlying at least 4 year range is rather heartening. So what we're certainly starting to see is some return to performance of these Asian markets, and even Indonesia, which has been a terminal underperformer really over the course of the last not just year but few years, is back in a potential area of support. It's right at the lower side of the range, and it has bounced from around the $1,600 level on numerous occasions since 2015. So I think those are some of the more important markets. Then when we look at what's going on Wall Street, well, we are right in the region of the peak seen back in October, and the market did pause in here today. It's tax day in the USA, so there perhaps a lot of people are writing checks rather than buying shares, and we've had a bit of a pause, but that's all it is. Now, the bigger question is we do have a short-term overbought condition. One thing, and I'll post this chart in comment of the day today, but if we look at a weekly chart of the RSI, and I don't look at these types of indicators particularly often, but one thing that we can see is that there are lower highs on. I'm sorry, I put in. This is the stochastics indicator. My mouth is moving faster than my brain. Sorry about that. When we look at this one on a weekly basis, we do have lower highs on the RSI, and that is very clear, particularly because of the acceleration that we had right at the beginning of 2018. But we don't have the lower highs on the index, so this is a bearish divergence. What it suggests is that we're in for at least some consolidation of this really impressive rebound that we've had since the beginning of this year. This isn't the first time we've had a very impressive rebound right off the first day of the year that persisted for a few months. But as we move out of the most seasonally attractive period for the markets, then it's going to be more difficult to sustain an additional momentum. We're right in the middle of the earnings season. Now, there have been a lot of earnings downgrades, and certainly that was priced in. But now the question is whether as how much of those revised downward earnings estimates are going to be beaten. And that's likely to be the deciding factor on whether we can see these markets break upwards in the near term. I personally think that we're much more likely to see some pause and consolidation before we see this market breaking on the upside, just by virtue of the fact that it has been so incredibly impressive on the upside that there is, I think, quite a strong likelihood that we're going to get a pause in consolidation, and then that negative divergence with the RSI certainly suggests that momentum is coming out of the market. So that also contributes to the potential for at least a consolidation in here. What I thought was also worth highlighting is that when you do get these divergences, for example, back in 2015 and 16, we had a bullish divergence where you had a higher reaction low on the RSI and a lower low on the index, and that was a clear indication that momentum was starting to come back into the market. Well, when you get these kinds of divergences at key levels, then I think that's perhaps the most useful time to look at these kinds of indicators. Even if we were not going to look at the indicator at all, well, I think it's very obvious that we're right in the region of an important area of resistance, and that there are a lot of people asking whether now is not the time to take some money off the table, whether it is time to start hedging some exposure. And that's a determination that people are going to be coming to over the course of the next few days and weeks. And that's usually something that contributes to range formation. Now, when we look at the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, it was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it has so far continued to hold this breakout to new highs. And this has been a rollicking advance since the beginning of this year. But it also has this short-term overbought condition. Now, when we look at what's going on in the European markets, well, the DAX index is back above the 12,000 level, and that's certainly positive. When we look at what's going on in Europe, well, now the question is whether it's going to be able to hold this 12,000 level. The Germans could be engaging in stimulus. They haven't done it yet. The reordering of the automotive sector in Germany with the advent of electric vehicles is going to be incredibly disruptive, not least for the auto manufacturers themselves, but most especially for their suppliers. And that's something that I don't think the market has paid particular attention to just yet, not least in terms of Germany's continued economic expansion. Well, that is certainly an overhead top formation. We had the downward the breakdown. Now we've had a reversionary move. The big question is whether we're going to see the DAX sustain this move above 12,000. And that's a big question. The relative strength of the euro is going to be I think a deciding factor in that. It is now back to the 113 area, and that represents the first area of potential resistance. There is little appetite for a strong euro in Europe, and while there is no country wants a strong currency, there are some that need weaker currencies more than others, and certainly Europe and the Eurozone falls into that category. The continued support that the ECB is lending to governments with the purchases of bonds, debt forgiveness in particular for Greece, is contributing to its outperformance, and the market was in additional upward territory in here today. And I suspect that the vast majority of people never anticipated that they would see Greece coming back to relative strength in the next decade, but certainly it is responding favorably to debt forgiveness for understandable reasons. Then the European banking sector has cleared the 100-point level, and it did that on Friday. Well, that's also corresponding with the region of the trend mean. Now, as long as that is holding the progression of higher reaction lows, then I think we can conclude that the benefit of the doubt can be given to the upside. And it's right at the lower side of an evolving range, which has been underway now for 7 years. So, even in a worst-case scenario, well, the issue, of course, with getting very bearish of banks in Europe is that they get nationalized when it looks like they're going to go out of business, and then they get excised from the market. So that's definitely what's happened with the European banking sector, because this index today is nothing like what it was back in 2011, not least because there aren't nearly as many banks in it. And then you look at Germany, where there's really only a Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank, and they're proposing to merge. So this index is really an index of French, Italian, and Spanish banks, and that's representative of the difficulties that those countries' banking sectors have been experiencing. But it does look like it is on a recovery trajectory, and the IBEX in Spain is also back above its trend mean, and it is potentially now in the process of breaking a more than year-long downtrend. When we look at what's going on in Portugal, then it's a pretty similar story, that it has consolidated above the trend mean and is now breaking higher. So that's, I think, starting to highlight here that investors are looking at the problem childs of Europe, which are all along the southern periphery, and they're thinking that there is potential here that we're going to see some recovery potential. What I find particularly interesting with regard to Italy is that it now has three higher reaction lows, or at least it's put in the third one, and now it's pushing back up towards that 25,000 level. Well, I don't think we're going to see the index go straight through 25,000, but there's certainly a potential that it could go and have a look at it at some point over the next year, and then we get some consolidation. But the fact that you have the higher reaction lows inside the base formation is suggestive of the contention that there is accumulation underway, and Italy is likely to benefit from the continued buying of its bonds. As long as they are towing the line in terms of the fiscal austerity mantra, then the ECB will continue to buy their bonds, and that is all aimed at the eventual introduction of a federal state with transfers, where eventually a country like Italy will benefit. That's something that nobody is willing to talk about within the Eurozone today, because it is the long-term ambition that was never voted for, but that is the longer-term reality. And it's I think it is a longer-term rationale for having some interest in Europe. Then when we look at the commodity complex, well, the gold market, we'll get to gold, the oil market, has been largely range-bound over the last 5 days. It hasn't pulled back by more than $7 in months, and this looks like a pause in consolidation around this 72.50 area, which is very consistent. And we do get these periods when oil prices trend in a very consistent manner. And then when they start to become less consistent, well, then that's when we get changes. And when we can see that it's been trending so very consistently, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And if this is still a consistent environment, well, we can anticipate that it's going to be ranging more or less below the 72.50 area for at least the next 6 weeks, and then it should be pushing up again for in the next $5 increment. If as long as it is doing that, then this remains a recovery scenario. But then, of course, we have the fact that there's M&A activity picking up in the oil sector. There's a race underway to gain as much exposure to the Permian Basin as possible. Obviously, prices are not nearly as attractive today as they would have been 10 years ago. And certainly also, we've seen that there have been some very big problems for companies like BHP Billiton, who paid way too much for their assets before the oil price started to crack in 2008. The unconventional oil and gas sector is enormously capital intensive. It's much more expensive to drill these horizontal wells, and that is a potential credit issue over the medium term. So that is one of the things to pay particular attention to in the credit markets. It's not simply that you have companies like Netflix that really do represent a credit risk, because they have got an awful lot of money that they're going to have to spend. And it is interesting here that Netflix was able to sustain or at least rally off its lows in here today. The much bigger question is whether it's going to be able to break the sequence of lower rally highs. This is a company that is... well, one could potentially argue will never make a profit. And now we have the high yield sector, which is continuing to compress. Well, this is a very clear suggestion that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, to continued support from central banks, that we are not going to have interest rate hikes anytime soon. And this is clearly suggesting that the next move will be to cut rates. Well, as long as high yield spreads are contracting like they are right now and continue to push lower, then that is likely to act as a tailwind to these credit risks. And that, in fact, is probably one of the reasons why the Federal Reserve decided that they were going to stop raising interest rates, because the federal government has got a wall of debt that they need to refinance this year, and that would certainly be a lot easier with lower interest rates and tighter bond yields. Well, the 10-year yield has pushed back up above the low that was put in at the beginning of the year. It has unwound about half of the overbought condition relative to the trend mean, but there is a clear downward bias evident since the failed upside break above 3%, and that would need to be broken in order to really confirm that we're back in a supply-dominated environment. So when we think about where we are in terms of the broader environment, there's obviously this question that everyone is asking about: where are we in terms of the cycle? How long can we anticipate that this liquidity-fueled environment is going to persist for? And are the central banks of the world going to move in a quick enough fashion to forestall the economic contraction that was priced in at the end of last year? But the fact that gold prices have continued to steady around the $1,275 area is suggestive that people are at least willing to have some hedge against the potential that the next big move in interest rates is downwards. The fact that gold, excuse me, that gold prices have been firming from the region of the trend mean is still rather positive. Now, of course, this is gold and it's not the most consistent trend in the world, so we can't rule out the potential that gold prices could pull back in a more dynamic manner. But so far, they have been able to hold on to the region of the lower side of this evolving range. If we do start to see the bond yields starting to come back down again, then that is likely to be one of the catalysts people are watching for getting back into the gold market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.